Hi, I'm Ryan Meeks, and after years of trying to make life work as a struggling artist, independent filmmaker, and musician, I thought to myself, hey self, wouldn't it be helpful to ask other artists how they're finding their path in this world? And so now, that's exactly what I'm doing on a bi-weekly basis. Welcome to The Path of Art. Welcome to The Path of Art. I'm Ryan Meeks, your host, and we're here today with John Smith, DJ and morning show host of 103.5 The Arrow in Salt Lake City. And we're talking about his path of how he got to be a DJ and many other very interesting things which he has done along the way and that he currently does. Kind of like cool stuff in Utah. And you're also doing a new thing called Arrow Eats.
Correct.
Where you're eating stuff.
Right.
I want that job.
I'll just tell you how that I don't want to get too far off topic, like right off the get-go. So we do the feature called Cool Stuff in Utah, in which you are a member of the Cool Stuff team. A lot of people may not know
right.
that.
Right, yeah. I still do some photography for you guys.
You're
every
one
now
of our
and then.
Camera
video,
guys.
Video, right.
Our videographers. So a lot of the, you know, we have clients in the building and they're like, hey, we want you to do a Cool Stuff video on this or on this or on this. And sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't, where it's like, well, what makes this cool? So there's a restaurant called Crack Shack, which is on 9th and 9th, real artsy neighborhood. And it's great chicken. Like it's just like, I'm not endorsing them at the moment, but
it's really good.
It's called Baja style fried chicken. And so it's like fried chicken, like Kentucky Fried Chicken style fried chicken, but with like Mexican food seasoning.
Oh.
And it's amazing.
So it's almost fusion like.
Yes. And it's something that they invented. They're from San Diego. And they came in and they're like, hey, we want to do a cool stuff in Utah about this chicken restaurant. And I'm like, well.
But it's not like a Utah owned.
Yeah.
Right?
They're from San Diego. They're brand new. It is really cool. But I've got it. And so we came up with this idea to do Arrow Eats, where we can talk about cool restaurants and cool places to eat and cool places to go to get food. And Crack Shack was the first. And we've since done like R&R Barbecue and Mo Betta's and some other great places that that we love going to. So,
hey, man, eating for a living, you can't beat that.
Dude, it's awesome. They give us free food.
Yeah.
What's up?
Exactly what I'm thinking. So, let's see. I mean, so you do all this stuff for the Arrow, and you also are a volunteer firefighter.
Correct.
Firefighter. Sorry, let me pronounce
Correct.
That correctly.
Right.
So, I mean, how does that work with your schedule? How do you work that in?
So, just like it's, you know, some guys play golf, some guys put ships in bottles, you know, collect coins. I fight fires. It's honestly a great way to serve my community. It's a great way to put some of my other skills to use that I've developed over the years of crisis management and handling myself in emergency situations. And I like helping people. And it started when I was with a different radio station a few years ago, and I didn't feel like I was doing much. Right. Like I was doing my radio thing. And then
in terms of like making a difference type
of
thing.
Yeah. I had to feed my soul. You know what I mean? It was like I felt. So one of my things is one of my self-governed rules is that I need to give back to the community. Right. You should always be giving something back to the community because I'm a lucky cat, man, to do what I do for a living and be able to feed my family and pay my bills just by telling fart jokes on the radio. I owe this to my community to do something good. So I do things. I work with the police department and I work with the Boy Scouts and then my local volunteer fire department. They were like, hey, we need people. And I was like, I'm people. That sounds like fun. I'll give that a shot. And I fell in love with it, man. I love fighting fires. It's so much. It's so rewarding in so many levels. It keeps you physically strong. It keeps you mentally aware, and it kind of keeps you in tune with where people are and what they need. And then you develop these skills throughout that it's like, oh, hey, if my kid gets hurt. Now I'm an EMT. Now I know how to fix this. Or now my neighbor's house is on fire. Hey, I know how to put that out. That's great.
So I bet that also kind of grounds you a little bit in reality, because you get to see a lot of difficult things.
Yeah.
And specifically recently, you helped with some 4th of July fires.
Yeah. I mean, I've personally been on 7 wildfires so far this year, and it's only July is the time that we're filming this or taping this. And the fire behavior that we're seeing the past couple of years is bizarre. And the one thing that all of these fires have in common is that everybody says they're odd. You know what I mean? Mm. And that's kind of a weird irony where it's
so
like,
it's not necessarily people that they have in common. It's just that they're odd.
It's like, man, this fire behavior is so odd. It's burning so fast. It's burning so hot. It's taking up so many acres. It's burning so many homes. And all of these fires that we're seeing all over the country, even all over the world, like we're seeing them in France and Spain and Portugal, and everybody's saying the same thing. Man, this is so odd. And then it's like, how long do we get to say that this is odd before we say that this is normal?
Right.
Right? Because it's every summer. It's the same thing, and we like, see these giant fires.
Odd about them that was different from the year before.
I think that it's. I don't even think it's the year before. I think people are just kind of used to the way that the fire situation was in the early 1990s. I don't think people realized that the world has changed. The planet has changed, and I know there's like this big controversy. You know, is it global warming? Is it climate change? I don't know what it is. All I know is that for the past 5 years that I've been a firefighter, I have been fighting enormous wildfires all over the country. And all of them are – everybody says, yeah, it's so odd. It's so odd. And it's like, no, it's not. Like, this is now the norm. This is normal now. But yeah, it like you say, it does ground you because it gives you a chance to be somebody other than silly radio guy.
Right.
And the people at the fire department, they don't care that you're local celebrity. They don't care that you're the cool stuff in Utah guy.
You're just there to help.
You're just
like
a firefighter, and you're just as much, if not less than, the full time guys. And that's.
Right.
That's also a good thing when you're in this line of work is to
keeps your ego in check.
Exactly.
I get it. Well, you're also a bit of a history buff.
Totally, yeah.
And that's kind of what Cool Stuff in Utah is about, is like the history in Utah. And so my question about that is, so what do you find that's punk rock about that? Because you also are kind of the punk rock guy around here, right?
So punk rock is kind of like punk rock is for me, it's not just a music. It's an ethos, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost a way of living. It's a belief system in a way. I'm going to stop just short of calling it a religion because I think that's ridiculous to call something like punk, but,
right.
It's a, doing things your way, doing things that better your existence and the people around you. It's taking good care of your family, and it's doing as much as you can for yourself, if for no other reason than to teach yourself how to do it, right? So when it comes to history, what's punk rock about history is that our entire lives we're told the same stories. Right.
Mm-hmm.
We're told the same stories about Abraham Lincoln and George Washington. And here in Utah, it's the same stories about the pioneers and Brigham Young. And this is the place. And don't get me wrong. All of those stories are very important. They are the fabric that is Utah.
Yeah. And if you think about the ethos, they were pretty punk rock coming out here in the middle of nowhere to try to settle this area.
Going against the grain, buddy. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm all about. I'm about going against the grain. And what's more punk rock than a religion founded in the United States of America that has to go to war with the United States Army just for the privilege of existing?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty awesome
that
when you think about
rock.
It. But there's a lot of stories here in Utah that we don't know, that we drive past these places every day. We never ask what's inside them or what happened there or how they got there. And I have always been fascinated. I'm just a fiend for just local stories. Like who built that building? And why? Why is it there? Why is it called the Walker Building? Why is there a great big tower on the roof that lights up? What is that for? And then I go in and I find out, and it's like, man, that is so cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then you like you take another layer off of that, and it's like Utah's only one of three states that does not have a Utah History Museum, right? We don't have a state history museum. There's no one compendium for Utah state history. We have the religious history. We have the military history. We have the business history. But we don't have any state history that talks about who we are as Utahns and who we are as people in Salt Lake City or Tooele County. And I think that's cool that we have all of these stories. And I think it's tragic that nobody's telling them. So right. Not that I'm this great storyteller. Really, I mean, if I'm being honest, the project was born out of boredom during the pandemic. I think you were there for the very beginning. You were there for episode two, I think.
Yeah,
right?
Episode two. You'd filmed one and I said, hey, do you need a camera guy?
Yeah, that was so we filmed we did an episode on the building that we work in, the Triad Center, which is downtown, which has a fascinating story behind it.
It is, and it was fascinating. I remember everyone in the building going, oh, I didn't know that.
Right?
That's so cool.
And we work here. And really that came because we were during the pandemic, during the first stages of the shutdown, we were here in the building doing the radio show. And like on some days I'd be the only one here on eight floors. I'd have an entire eight story building in the downtown Salt Lake area to myself. And so I'd just go wander around. And that's where the project was born. And we've since grown to 41 episodes. We've gone to all corners of the state. We're finding all sorts of great stuff. We've got a lot of great financial support from sponsors in the company. So the project is going really, really well. I'm just a small part of it. Yeah. You know, you're a big part of it. Stone, our other camera guy, is a huge part of it. Sam, our producer, is a huge part of it.
I think Sam does most of the heavy lifting, to be honest.
She does a lot.
But it's a really cool project.
I show up and tell the story, and that's my job.
Yeah, and that's what everyone likes to see. John Smith talking about cool stuff in Utah.
Telling fart jokes, being punk rock.
Telling fart jokes. So you also, at some point, you went to Iraq.
Yeah.
I've seen pictures of you,
twice.
In Iraq. So how does that play in?
Well, that kind of goes back to the whole punk rock thing, right? Where I was doing a morning show in St. George. And for those that may not know, St. George is a small town. It's a small city in the southwest corner of the state, right on the Arizona-Nevada border in the corner of Utah. And we had a National Guard unit that deployed to Kuwait. And this was in 2007. And I thought it would be really cool. Nobody had ever done this before. I'm like, I want to go do my show live with the troops. You know, we have a bunch of our local people that are out, you know, grunting in the suck, out in the sun. And I want to go do my show from Kuwait for a week. And it took so long. It took so much red tape to get through because everybody's like, no, you can't. Your lawyers will never go for that. The Army will never go for that. The State Department will never go for that.
And I guess you wouldn't take no for an answer.
No, and that's kind of the thing where it's like, no, I'm going to do this. I'm going to find a way. And it took so long. By the time I got approval, the local unit had come back. It took a year and a half, and they'd already returned from their deployment by the time I got my approval. And so they're like, hey, this group is back. Is there anybody else you'd like to go see? And I said, I want to go to a forward unit in Iraq. And they're like, done. You leave October 1st. And I was like, okay. And they're like, here's your orders. Here's this. And, it turns out I went for like, I think 2.5 months, and just did my show from Baghdad with a group called the 410 Cav, 4th Infantry Cav unit out of, Fort Collins, Colorado, Fort Carson, Colorado.
Okay.
And there was a lot of like, you kind of had to, I don't want to say lie, but you kind of had to fill in some blanks. You kind of had to exaggerate a few things to get from place to place in Iraq because I'm there by myself, right? I'm not there with a producer or the military. They put me in uniform and they're like, you need to dress like we dress or else people are going to single you out. So you get the same uniform, you get the same patches, body armor. You just don't get a gun. And so you get in there and you're deployed and you start living that lifestyle for, you know, 68 days.
Wow.
And then you come home and you're like, wow, that was really fun. I'm going again. And then I went to Syria. I went to Iraq another time. I went out with the Navy and spent.
And you were out there doing your radio show?
Yeah.
From there?
Yeah.
Wow.
Amongst other things. Once I had, you know, I was blogging was a thing at the time.
Right.
Facebook was in its infancy. MySpace was still a thing at the on the first trip.
Oh, MySpace.
But you go out there and the Army and the National Guard and the agencies that you're working with, they realize that, oh, hey, this guy's a recruiting opportunity. So they start hooking you up with people. They're like, hey, you should go see this guy. Hey, you should go see this guy. And you're like, I'm not going to say no. Am I going to turn down a trip to Iraq again? No. Am I going to turn down a chance to spend 2 weeks on a Navy ship off the coast of Africa? No. That's awesome. And so you get to go do all these really cool things. But looking back on it now, like it's been 12 years since my last adventure. Mm-hmm. Looking back on it now, it's insane. What was I thinking, dude? That's crazy.
That's a very scary thing to even think about doing. And it's kind of awesome that you just did it.
Punk rock.
Punk rock. All right. Well, we're going to take a short break here. We're talking with John Smith. We've had some great stories about who he is. And when we get back, we'll be talking about how he got there. This is The Path of Art. Welcome back to The Path of Art. We're here with John Smith from 103.5 The Arrow, and we just went over just who he is, and he's a pretty great guy if you didn't gather from that.
Thanks, dude.
And so we're going to dive into how he got there. So your main thing right now, the thing that's bringing income, is your job as a DJ or morning show host.
Right, yeah. The bread and butter is the morning show.
Right. And so what first got you interested in radio or DJing?
That's, it was, you know, it's just kind of one of those things where I think everybody knew what I was going to do before I did. I've always been really into music and rock music specifically. So as a kid, I was always into bands, you know, like Van Halen and Led Zeppelin and as well as like new wave bands like Depeche Mode and REM and Oingo Boingo, you know, some of my favorites. And, you know, I'd always have music playing. I'd always have tapes. I'd always have records, even at like the age of five. And my older brother, very much the same way, he ended up getting into radio a couple of years before I did. And he helped me get my first interview. I got on a station called 107.5 The End. He was the morning show host of The End at the time. This was 1997. And I think I got hired like January 98, somewhere around there, really early on in that year.
Were you in high school at this time?
I had just graduated high school. I was fresh out of high school and still trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. I had a couple of career paths and I was like, you know, I'll try this radio thing. There's no way I can make a career out of this. No way. Because I just didn't think I was that lucky. I didn't think that I had a shot. Right. And you go in and you just kind of put your time in and started doing weekend overnights and, learning various jobs and tasks throughout the industry. And, you know, 25 years later, here I am, still plugging away, still just kind of working at it.
So it was just kind of a job that you got from help of your brother and it became your passion of sorts?
Yeah, he got me the interview and he taught me a lot of stuff. But, you know, I had to prove myself along the way many times over at the same time. And it's kind of one of those things where you don't realize that you know a lot about something until you try to explain it to somebody else. And I realized as
then you
the
get
years,
a blank stare back.
Yeah. You know, you start going on about, you know, how you schedule music and how you pick songs and how you, you know, at the time it was producing commercials and, you know, setting up live broadcasts, and you start explaining this to people and they're just like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And then you're like, oh, maybe I do know what I'm doing. But I think a common thread among creative people that you'll probably say people on this show have said the same thing, where it's like, I'm terrified that one day people are going to wake up and they're going to realize how full of crap we all are. You know what I mean? Where it's like, wait a minute, how much, what, we're paying this guy to do what? He gets to sit in there and play music all morning? No, go get a job, hippie.
It's a pretty cool gig when you think about it.
It's the best job in the world. I am the luckiest cat I have ever met, and I have no idea how they keep letting me do it. I really don't. Call that imposter syndrome if you want, but I think people ask, you know, how'd you become a success? And I'm like, this is not success. This is survival. Like, this is, I don't want to starve to death. So I just figure out a way to make this work, make people laugh.
So was there ever a point, like, you know, that you had more imposter syndrome, or that you felt that it wasn't going to work out in radio?
I mean, it comes and goes. There are certain times when you're really proud of yourself and you pull something off and you're like, man, I'm on top of the world right now. You know what I mean? But the thing with radio is it's like, depending on where you're at or who you are, you'll see measures of success that kind of level up differently, right? And if you're not enough without these levels, you won't be enough with them in this job. You know what I mean? Where it's like, okay, if I measured my success or happiness by you know, how well the job is going, it's like, okay, well, I'll be happy once I get a full-time job. And then you get full-time, and then you're like, okay, but I want to be on the morning show. And then you get a morning show. It's like, well, then I want to be on a morning show in a bigger market. And then you get that. And then it's like, okay, but I want to be number one, right? Mm-hmm. So it's this moving target. And if you're not enough without those, you know, imaginary trigger points, you'll never be enough with them. You know what I mean? You've got to love what you do, regardless of what other people see as success. So I get to come to work every morning and play great music, and it's a personal relationship that you build with the listeners, right? And the way that I measure that is when people come up to me and they're like, oh man, I love listening to your show, or oh man, you made me laugh so hard the other day. I don't take that as just flattery, which it is. It is flattery, but that is the true barometer of whether or not I'm doing my job.
Right. It's validation.
In a way, sure.
Like, and what I mean by that, it's like, I'm doing as good as I hope that I'm doing.
Exactly. You know, it's like the gold star at the end of the school year. It's like, okay, yeah, I passed the test. Somebody came up to me at this remote and they said, hey man, thanks for getting me out of bed in the morning. Okay. Yeah.
So what kind of led you, we talked about how this obviously became a passion at some point. And so when it became a passion, what experience led you to say, I'm going all in, I'm going to pursue this as my career? what was that experience?
I had, you know, my rent was due probably. I don't know. No, I mean, it's kind of one of those things where, kind of like we talked about with Iraq, mm-hmm. where it's like, no, I'm going to do this one way or the other. I'm not stopping until this happens. And that's just, I guess that's just the way I'm built. I'm too hard headed to admit defeat, maybe, or too hard headed to see that, you know, maybe there were other career paths that could have brought me more money. I don't know. But it was like, I decided, you know, early on, there's many jobs within radio that you can do, right? You can be a production guy and you can make the commercials that people hear, or you can be a music director and deal with the songs that people hear, or a promotions guy that sets up the live events. And throughout all of this, I had to do all of those as a full-time spot just for the privilege of being on the radio, with the ultimate goal of being on the radio and nothing else. And no matter what my job was, even if I was working at Blockbuster Video, which I had to do several times, it was always, what am I? I'm a DJ. You know, what do you do for a living? I'm a DJ. You know, even if I was only logging like 3 hours a weekend on the air and working 40 hours a week at Home Depot, it's like, I'm a DJ. That's what I do. And when you tell yourself that that's what you are, and you don't give yourself an out, right? I don't give myself an excuse to go, okay, well, yeah, I've got a radio show that I could do this weekend, but man, I need the hours at Home Depot. I better focus on this job because this is the one that's paying the bills. It's like, no, long game. I'm a DJ. This is where the priority is.
So that leads me to another question, something that's been brought to my attention recently, and it's about sacrifice.
Uh-oh.
Okay. This is kind of off topic. Not necessarily.
This wasn't on the prep sheet, Ryan.
Right. This was not on the prep sheet. But I'm starting to realize that there has to be like sacrifice to be able to have focus.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be one of the places that I struggle with the most, is because I have so many interests, like music,
yeah,
doing the podcasting, Magic the Gathering, you know, yeah, all these random things that I have put so much time into, my family. And at some point, I need to put them all out in front of me and decide what's going on the chopping block.
Maybe not on the chopping block, right? Think of it like a museum, right? A museum never keeps an exhibit in place for too long, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you may have the centerpiece. You may have the street appeal draw that brings people in, the T-Rex. But you always have these revolving exhibits kind of in the outer hallways. And that's kind of how I look at it, where it's like, okay, I'm really into action figures right now. So, you know, so this is what I'm going to do.
Which you literally are.
I am
into action figures.
I collect action figures, man. And it is a huge stress relief to be able to switch your brain off and go hunting for action figures. I love going to Disneyland. That's another thing is I love history. I love making videos. I love doing, you know, I have a lot of interests. But doing them all at the same time, obviously, you don't get to do much of anything. So
right.
You just kind of say, okay, this one's going in the archive for a little while. This one's going in the back room. And I'm going to focus really heavily on my cool stuff in Utah videos because I need this to take off, or I want this to hit a certain level of viewership by a certain date. But the centerpiece is always radio for me. So in your case, like, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up, Ryan? What do you want to be?
That's kind of how this podcast got started. I'm like, I don't know. But I did decide, look, I'm going to focus on podcasting really hard.
Yeah.
For at least the next year and just see what happens.
And that's the way to do it. And that's, you know, I sacrificed a lot. I sacrificed mm-hmm. Birthdays. I sacrificed having friends. I mean, you talk to anybody that was like, oh, who'd you hang out with in the year 2000 or the 2000s? And nobody will say John Smith because I was always working. I went 9 months working 7 days a week because I was trying to get my foot inside that radio station building every single day for whatever reason. Hey, we need somebody to take out the trash. I'll do it. Hey, we need somebody to put these carts away. I'll do it. I need somebody to open my mail. I'll do it. Just to get in there, just to get a foothold. And so when you talk about sacrifice, yeah, I sacrificed a lot, but it wasn't just me that had to sacrifice, right? I had to have that support structure in place too.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a wife and kids. Even today, even where I'm at in my career, which is pretty solidified at this point, I'm still sacrificing. Mm-hmm. Just this past weekend, I think I was home in 48 hours. I think I was home for 9 of them because it was like, I'm doing parades and I'm doing live broadcasts and I'm doing these special events and then I'm out fighting fires and I'm doing this and I'm doing this and I'm doing this. And luckily for me, my family understands that that's one, a part of my fabric. It's part of who I am. But two, that they're also front and center, right? That I'm doing this so that we can all survive as a family unit and pay the bills and have fun vacations when it's time to play.
Right.
So you sacrifice sleeping in the mornings. You sacrifice going to bed early at night. So just little things here and there is where I would say, you know, I'm rambling at this point. But when it comes time to make those sacrifices that you talked about, you know, laying those things out in front of you, it could be something as small as sacrificing sleeping in an extra 15 minutes. You know, wake up 15, 20 minutes earlier. Go to bed 15 to 20 minutes later. Maybe sacrifice a lunch break here and there so that you can organize your magic cards so that you can still keep those.
I think maybe Magic the Gathering is my version of your collecting the action figures.
And that's important, man. It's important. It's important stuff. But do I do it every day? No. I mean, I get the action figures out and, you know. Well, I say out as if they don't have an entire room in my house for action figures. But, you know, that's maybe one or two days, maybe a year that I get to spend just on that.
Right. It's so interesting to see what others sharpen the saw with, you know.
Yeah.
That's a phrase my dad always used. And I think...
I like that. That's a good phrase.
Right, because you got to keep it sharp. I think also that Covey guy, Stephen Covey, I think he uses the same phrase. Sharpening. You got to sharpen the saw.
He's the day planner guy.
Right, the guy that makes the
Franklin Covey.
The day planners. And so, and then you went from station to station, and you eventually arrived at the 103.5 The Arrow here.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's been going well for you.
You know, and it's funny, man. That was the story of how I ended up on The Arrow specifically is hilarious because – it started out as an awesome day, and then it became a terrible day.
Oh, wow.
And then the next day was awesome again.
Oh.
So I started out, I was on another radio station.
That sounds like a normal day.
And it was just a normal, yeah, right? Like, oh, it's just a total roller coaster. Oh, normal day. It's a Tuesday. So Metallica was in town. This was November 2018.
Oh, I went to that show.
Yeah, right.
Oh,
great
my gosh.
Show.
So
my gosh.
Awesome. So they wouldn't let me take my camera in.
I was having breakfast with Metallica's tour manager and
what?
Their record label. And we were getting ready for the show that night. And I was with a different station here in town who I'm not allowed to talk about.
Oh.
You know, because you know, I had to sign papers and stuff.
That's okay.
And then, so that station had a staff meeting for it was like an all staff meeting scheduled for that morning. And so we're over across the street. We're over at like Market Street Grill having breakfast. They have awesome waffles, and we're walking back over. And I'm with you know some high ranking guests from Metallica, and. People are going filing into the conference room to go have this meeting, and there's one of the company lawyers standing there, and he stops me. He's like, "Actually, we need you up on the third floor." And at that point, I knew it was like, "Oh no!" And I leaned over to the guy I was with. I'm like, "You'll have to excuse me. I need to go get fired."
And
that's literally what I said. Like, I didn't know how to handle it. Right. Like, I'd been fired so many times. You think I'd be better at it by now?
I was fired once and I was depressed for months.
Oh, no, no. See, that's
it's rough.
No, listen, for people listening, when you get fired, especially if you're in the entertainment world, you will be fired at some point. It will happen. You get 24 hours and then you get back to work. That's all the time you get. So you get to go home and you get to be depressed and you get to cry and you get to pout and kick the wall and shout at the screen and tear up your resume. And then you wake up at bright and early, 6 a.m. the next day, and you get back to work. And that's all you get. So in this case, I went up to the third floor and there was 14 or 15 other people from the company that were getting fired that same day.
Ooh.
And I waited for the general manager to walk in. I won't say his name. We'll call him Kevin. We waited for Kevin to come in. And the minute he came in, I called my wife. And I'm like, hold on, Kevin. You'll have to wait just a second. And I'm like, hey, honey, I'm about to get fired. So I'm going to call you back in a minute. and then I hung up the phone. I'm like, sorry, I just wanted to give my wife a heads up. Please, you were saying? And oh, wow. I did that so that I could spoil his intro. Right, I wanted to kind of break the ice and just be like, "Don't you? There's no way you're sugarcoating this one, bad boy." And then I laid into him in front of everybody. I just, because when you're a DJ, you talk for a living, right? Mm-hmm. This is all I do, and you get pretty good at it after a while. I can use words to do all sorts of crazy things. I can make you laugh and I can make you cry. And so in this case, we went for the latter. And I didn't hold anything back. And it wasn't just on my behalf. It was on behalf of everybody else in that room. Only one other person in there was an on-air personality. And a lot of these people were really hardworking behind-the-scenes cats that were just getting a shaft for no reason, just for budget cuts. Yeah. And, you know, however reason they ended up on the chopping block, I don't know. They were talented people. And as I'm sitting there and I'm just mad. I'm just angry. I look down and I've got a text message from Sue Kelly, who is now my boss on the Arrow. And she said, I know what's happening, ... Call me when you're done. Nice. And so I was unemployed for about 7 minutes. So,
wow.
So I left the room and I came straight over here to Bonneville and I got hired that same day part-time. They put me on part-time on middays. And again, I had to start at the bottom and I had to work my way up very, very quickly because I have a family to feed. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a first grader at home. I had a wife that is a stay at home mom. You know, it was a week before Thanksgiving, getting fired just before Christmas when you've got, you know, a kid waiting for Santa Claus at home. That sucks.
That's exactly what happened to me not too long ago.
Yeah, it
was right before Christmas. And I don't know. I don't want to say too much about it, but I felt like somehow the guy that let me go kind of enjoyed it.
It's a sick kind of people out there,
man. It was so kind of like, you know that like Christmas is right around the corner, but luckily I had done all my Christmas shopping in October.
There you go. That's October. A smart man.
Do Christmas shopping in October.
I've noticed that about you. You're a smart dude. You're a very careful guy, which I noticed, like, you and I spend a lot of time together doing the cool stuff shoots. And I noticed that I pry you out of your shell quite a bit.
Yeah.
I have to make you do things that scare you.
Right. I'm very cautious. That's for sure.
People don't know this. I'm gonna reveal this about you.
Oh, no.
Ryan has a tremendous fear of heights.
Yes. Oh my. And it's only getting worse with age. Oh my gosh. So we just got, okay, we barely live in the boundaries of Cottonwood Heights. I'm not going to say where it's at, but we barely live in there. We just got a Cottonwood Heights rec center membership.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so we go to the swimming pool often and they have like various tiers of diving boards.
Oh, you got the high dive.
Right.
Yeah.
So I go off the little one with my kid, okay. Right? And I'm like, I'm going to try the second one.
And how old is your kid?
She is 10.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
And so we go to the second one, which isn't that high of a dive. But as I walk out, like, you know where the board goes out, but then the whatever's underneath you doesn't go anymore. And you're just on board.
Right.
Right when I hit that point, like my vertigo just like, whoa. And then all of a sudden I turn into Mr. Bean in that episode on the high dive. And I'm like, oh my gosh, there's all these kids behind me waiting for me to go. And I'm just like this grown man, like holding tight
to
this.
To go off the diving board.
Yeah. And so I tried it three different times.
I'm picturing you in a Speedo as you're doing this. Were you in a tight swimsuit?
No, I'm not that much into Mr. Bean that I – wait, did he wear a Speedo?
Yeah, he did.
Okay. Anyway, but yeah, just that experience. Yes, I get vertigo. It's a thing, and it's getting worse as I get old.
We've dragged you to some pretty high places. You've been
the top of the Walker Building.
We put you on the roof of the city capitol, the city and county building,
and then we went to the roof of Adib's.
That was where Sam, our producer, developed a fear of heights. She didn't have a fear of heights until we did the old Villa Theater episode.
Oh, goodness.
Which we're all crawling over so if you know the Villa Theater was built in the 1950s, and it's this giant auditorium-style movie theater, which held like 700 people or something like that. And now it's a big open-area rug gallery because the movie theater closed a long time ago and this dude bought it. And we're crawling in the attic, the crawl space. Mm-hmm. We're going from one end of the building to the other. I don't know why we decided we wanted to do this. I think we just wanted to see if
it
let
cool.
us. And we're crawling along this like 2x4 catwalk. And you actually did great on this one.
Well, because I can't see that it's hundreds of feet below me because there's...
But
there's
ever since then, Sam has a fear of heights.
Wow.
Now she doesn't want to go up the ladders and do all this stuff. So now it's just me. So,
I will still go up the ladders with you.
You've always done it.
I always test myself. Even at the Cottonwood Heights Rec Center, I still test myself every time we go to see if I can do it.
I think the one time, I think you froze one time when we were climbing up the Rio Grande train station.
Oh, yeah.
And there was like this really tall vertical ladder.
Yes.
And it was like bolted into the bricks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like 40 feet.
Yeah, and it was a little rickety halfway through. I remember that. It was like, wait a second, this isn't as secure as I hope it is.
You're like halfway up. I think you were coming down. I think you'd already gone up, and you were coming back down, and you just stopped like halfway. And you're like, dude, you got to come the rest of the way. You can't live there. You got to do one or the other, man.
I can do this.
You can see those videos. Those videos are... Those ones are all still online. They're all still.
Right. Yeah. They're all on the Facebook page.
Yeah.
They're all on 103.5 The Arrow's Facebook page. Still,
nailed it.
So. Well, John, what is in your future? What do you have planned for the future?
If I'm lucky, I will never leave this job. I will never leave this station. I am so lucky to be on the station that I'm on. Not just because I love the music and I love the classic rock. But the listeners of this station are so passionate. It's the KRSP letters. They're iconic, right? They're part of Utah's history. The station's been around since 1967. And so you have generations that have grown up listening to the station when it was KRSP and then when it was Rock 103 and then it was Arrow 103.5 and now it's 103.5 The Arrow. And they still come up and they're like, hey, Rock 103, love it. And we just high five them and say, yep, because who am I to correct them?
And that's how they know it.
It's their station.
That's how they know it.
And in a way, it's kind of like Disneyland. It's become an iconic brand within itself. And I always tell people, like, this is the first radio station that I've been a part of where it's not my station, right? When I was with X96 or when I was with Sunny 103 or, 107.5 The End, it was always, oh, yeah, this is mine. This is my station. I'm making it mine. But with The Arrow, it's their station, and I'm just lucky to be a part of it. So if I'm lucky, I get to stay right where I'm at and never leave town. And hopefully I'd love to see the cool stuff in Utah videos grow. The Arrow Eats videos are growing really well. I'm getting older, so I don't know how much longer I'm going to be chasing fires, but I'll always be looking in old buildings and always playing great music. So
cool. And before we go, if you had one piece of advice for someone that's starting out, and they're like, I want to be a DJ or I want to be a radio personality, what would that one piece of advice be?
That would be, I mean, I don't know if I could give you one piece of advice. I will tell you the same thing that I tell everybody that does ask me that question, because you get that question a lot. I would say, one, love the job, not the product, right? You're going to work for, chances are you're going to work for a couple of different radio stations. You're going to work for a couple of different companies. There are the rare few that have worked for one radio station their entire career. And man, am I jealous of those guys. But what I learned early on was I will love doing this no matter what song I'm playing, right? I've played country. I've played rock. I've played Britney Spears. I've played rap. I've played classic rock. And fortunately for me, I'm on a format that I actually love listening to in my off time. But love the job, not the product. Do what you're going to do no matter what logo is on the golf shirt that I'm not going to wear anyway. And then the other thing is patience, right? This is a marathon, not a sprint. If you're going to be in radio for a long time, you've got to look way down that road and see where you're going. When you start getting your ego involved, those are short-term goals, right? Those are short-term objectives. When you set your ego aside and set your personal feelings about whoever you're working with or whoever you're working for aside, you can start looking down the road and seeing where your career is going to be. And thankfully, I've been able to do that more times than not. Now, nobody's perfect, right? I've screwed that up plenty of times. But when you're like, okay, I don't like where I'm at right now. I don't like the station, or I don't like this music, or I hate the people that I work for. Don't just quit. Find out what that next step's going to be. And if you're lucky, eventually you end up on a station like the Arrow or with a company like Bonneville or in a market like Salt Lake City where people still love their radio jocks. People still listen to their FM radios and participate in the games and the contests, and people in the building still respect you as a part of the culture, because that's not everywhere. Not everybody does that. So look for those long-term goals and be patient. It takes a long time to get there. This is not something that happens overnight, unless you're Sam, in which case, we plucked Sam out of the receptionist chair because I needed a producer for the morning show. And I'm like, nobody's here because of COVID, but what are you doing? And she's like, I work part time. I'm like, fine, you're now my producer. Come on up.
Now so, she went from wanting to be a nurse to doing radio.
Yeah, that's the thing. She was a nurse.
Right.
And now she's a morning show personality.
That's awesome.
Like, how does that happen?
Thank you so much for coming on, John. It's been a pleasure just talking with you about your story. And I hope anyone out there, if you're interested in becoming a DJ, that this was helpful for you to kind of map out how you can get to that point someday. This has been another episode of The Path of Art, and we'll see you next time.
Bye!
Thank you for listening to The Path of Art. If you or someone you know is creative and would like to tell your story, reach out to me at rmeeks@ksl.com. I might feature you on the show. If you liked our conversation, please make sure you follow the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. It really does help people to discover the show. Also, make sure you follow The Path of Art podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time.